joining us for his final face-to-face Pacific chat, because Pacific Waves is back next week, is Kuroi Hawkins. Kia ora, Kuroi.
Buenam, Brian.
Lovely to have you back, and I am going to miss having you in the studio, even though I'm sure it's going to be a lot easier having your own program and your own time, being able to craft everything, and you'll be able to go home earlier, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, these have been great. I've been really enjoying these chats.
Yeah, it's been lovely having you in. And it's interesting, the first story you've got for us tonight is Pacific Island leaders at the UN General Assembly. And I would not have expected there to be island nations wanting to take a stand on Taiwan. I would have thought that this is an area where a lot of island nations say, right, well, that's too big for us and we'll just stay out of the way and maybe try to make friends with Taiwan and China. But a few nations wanting Taiwan to be a full member of the UN or participate fully in the UN, maybe that's not quite the same thing. You can tell me more, Kuroi.
Yeah. So it's been a thing that Pacific Island nations that have been allies of Taiwan have always done at the UN General Assembly is really stand up and call for Taiwan to be recognized by the UN. Countries that have ties with Taiwan are usually really, really closely tied with them in terms of the aid, the health support, education support. So there's a lot of assistance that Taiwan gives to the allies that it does have. That's been dwindling in the Pacific, sadly, over the last few years. We've seen a lot of massive Pacific allies for Taiwan fall by the wayside. So the ones that are left, this week we've heard from several Pacific Island nations that are still recognized Taiwan that have called for Taiwan to be able to participate fully in the UN and the World Health System. So they've sort of tied this to how Taiwan has helped them through COVID with vaccines, with keeping them free of COVID. So we've got Nauru, the presidents of Nauru, Marshall Islands and Palau, who've addressed the assembly, and they've called for Taiwan to fully participate in the UN. Now, China continues, obviously, to oppose Taiwan's involvement as an equal partner at the UN or the WHO. That four Micronesian countries, which are Taiwan's remaining diplomatic allies in the Pacific, say it's time to bring them into the fold. So yeah, so they've stood up quite strongly. The other one as well is Tuvalu, which has talked about the support that Taiwan has given them to keep them COVID-free. So these are all COVID-19 free countries.
What you're actually telling me, Kuroi, is that the degree of support from Pacific Island nations is waning on Taiwan, that I'm sort of jumping on something which has actually been in decline for the last decade or two or three.
Yes, that's right. In the Pacific, my own country, Solomon Islands, was traditionally the largest supporter of Taiwan, and for years I've watched our prime ministers stand at that stage and advocate for Taiwan, and then in the last few years they made the switch to China. So that was a big deal that we were reporting on a couple of years ago. And then Kiribati, which has jumped back and forth between Taiwan and China in the past, is now, as I understand it, recognizing China. So yeah, I looked up briefly before coming up. There's only 15 states that recognize Taiwan as the Republic of China. Some interesting takes there. They're also the other things they talked about at the UN. Obviously, we talked about climate change that they've been standing strong on. Interestingly, Nauru took the time to use its platform to speak in support of seabed mining, because it's the country that has triggered that 2-year rule at the International Seabed Authority that could see it mining the ocean floor by 2023. So it used its speech to say that, look, we need these minerals. We need these metals for our push for green energy, for alternative energy, to help us combat climate change. So that's how they phrased that, which was quite interesting from Nauru.
Well, I guess it's also a source of foreign income for Nauru too, that must be something that a small country, has to weigh up in terms of its economic future, along with the environmental concerns about seabed mining.
Yeah, that's probably where they're coming from. But the problem the people, environmentalists and people that have been critical of seabed mining, is that the ocean borders aren't just your borders. What you do in the ocean affects a lot of people across the Pacific, and the science for seabed mining is sort of just really fresh. There's not enough data, not enough known about the deep ocean. So actually, in the same sort of space, Fiji's Prime Minister Bainimarama has spoken out in New York. He hasn't spoken at the assembly yet, but he's made an announcement that Fiji has banned seabed mining altogether in its waters. Prior to that, it was just a moratorium on seabed mining to allow science to continue. But now he's saying there's an outright ban for Fiji, which is more big news out of New York.
Do you think, Roy, and you probably, I don't know if you can answer this question, but, you know, I love throwing questions at you without warning, whether the stances on seabed mining are more political or whether they're driven by a strong environmental concern. So Fiji, for example, saying, right, we're banning this. Is that, do you think, because the Fijian government genuinely believes that this is too risky for the environment, or because there's other politics at play here behind the stance?
It's probably a little bit of both, but Fiji's always been very strong on climate. It's always been very strong on the oceans. It helped host those previous international climate talks. So it's not a deviation from its spiel. I'm sure there's a bit of politics involved there as well. But given the IUCN vote as well, where we saw a lot of countries, civil society and indigenous peoples vote overwhelmingly for a moratorium globally on seabed mining. It's sort of playing into that sort of line of where that social mandate is right now in terms of seabed mining.
COVID. Got any more to tell us about that particular pandemic tonight, Karoi?
Yeah, not so much numbers, but we talked about those inter Samoa flights between Samoa and American Samoa, Pangapango and Apia. So apparently those will be resuming. So the Thursday's flight out of Pangapango operated as scheduled, with the returning flight from Apia bringing local residents as well as workers from that Starkist Samoa cannery that I talked about under the territory's guest worker permit law. Fridays will not operate, apparently. So that's today's will not operate due to a nationwide lockdown in Samoa for that two-day mass COVID-19 vaccination campaign. But the health director, Motusa Tuileama Nua, says all incoming passengers from Samoa will undergo the required quarantine at the designated government facility. So I was talking about early in the week how there were some concerns about that one case that popped up in American Samoa. They closed down that Honolulu link, and there was just concerns about whether the flights between Samoa and American Samoa would continue. But apparently they will, and sort of been suspended for that rollout of that lockdown, vaccination lockdown that was happening. We got some vaccines going out from New Zealand again to the Pacific. That's been announced. So we have, bear with me here, New Zealand donating more COVID-19 vaccines to the Pacific via the COVAX facility. So Pfizer vaccines for Cook Islands, Niue and Tokelau, that was announced. And also looking at Cook Islands again, the hearing from businesses in the Cook Islands that this lockdown has actually been harder. They're finding it much harder than the first time round. They're saying that they're not sure. Some of the businesses there are feeling like the government support is a little bit less than it was prior for the initial COVID lockdown, and they're quite concerned whether they'll even be able to make it to November, if the bubble even opens by November. So, yeah, so some really concerning things out of the Cook Islands and Solomon Islands, a bit of news from there. They're working to bring home some stranded students and nationals still in the Philippines, which they brought a heap of them back from the Philippines at the start of the pandemic. And that was where some of the cases, the COVID cases in MIQ that I talked about that Solomon Islands has had, was through those repatriations. So apparently that's been paused, but they're hoping to try and bring that back up again. And again, Solomon Islands closed its borders quite strictly with Delta popping up around the region and trying to push that vaccination so that they can open up again.
In Fiji, isn't there compulsory vaccination for some members of the workforce and the government workforce? And is that an issue at the moment?
Yes, definitely an ongoing issue. I pitched this story because it was just interesting, a employment legal expert in Fiji just breaking down how the government is is approaching this legislation. So he was talking about how they can't penalize people for not taking the vaccine. So they're tying it to things like workplaces and employment, and they can sort of make it mandatory by getting people to be vaccinated out of the interest of the health of others in that. So that was why I'd brought this up. But yeah, Fiji definitely announced COVID-19 mandatory vaccination in July. So public servants are told they need to be fully vaccinated. He directed the section of the workforce to vaccinate against the virus by the 1st of November or face losing their jobs. And again, that November 1 is that date that he sort of set as a deadline for Fiji to open up to the world. They're currently up to 60, I'll just get the numbers here.
The number goes over the page, does it?
68.8% of the target population.
Right.
Fully vaccinated now against COVID-19. But still those cases, still quite high, still in the triple figures, 175 new cases of Delta in the community, and the deaths still climbing, death toll now at 583. So, yeah, still a lot of issues in Fiji with that, for sure.
Yesterday, you were talking about Indonesia and West Papua and military forces responding to, attacks on some military there, Indonesian military, by those who are fighting for independence, and the concern that actually the reprisals by the Indonesian military would be more of a problem than the actual attacks themselves. And I see now the military are evacuating residents from some parts of the conflict zones in West Papua.
Yep, that's right. So, yeah, that's definitely always an issue in terms of the blame in these situations. So Indonesia's military says they've been evacuating residents of Kibirok district in Papua's province following more violence there. Now, there's some soldier is the latest victim of the violent exchanges. He was killed by pro-West Papuan fighters, and some of the issues around this one was a attack on a school and health clinic last week, which left it destroyed by fire, and the military is saying that it was the Liberation Army fighters who instigated that and pulled off that attack. However, the Liberation Army is actually saying that it's the military that attacked the health clinic, and they've shown some evidence of helping health workers and people that are lost in the jungle, bringing them back to safety. So, yeah, still quite a really problematic situation in Papua, up in those regions.
When residents are evacuated by the military, they're likely to be West Papuan, and are they likely to maybe not be able to get home again?
Yeah, like we were saying last week, so there is a mix of West Papuan and Javanese all throughout Papua. So I'm assuming it'd be a mix of those. What we were seeing earlier that we were talking about was villagers fleeing conflict, and the military saying that they were fleeing because the Liberation Army were attacking. But some of the reports from the churches we were hearing was that they fled after the attacks when they saw the buildup of security forces coming to retaliate to the attack. So yeah, though just the searches for these freedom fighters going through the villages, going through places looking for these people, seems to be as much of a problem as the Liberation Army fighters attacking military outposts for Indonesia.
I'm just wondering whether there's a temptation for the military to use this as an excuse to get rid of West Papuans. Say, force them out, and maybe they never come home, and their places are taken by migrants from Java. Or am I reading too much into this, Kuroi?
I'm not sure about that, but we have seen some concerns about, as I was saying earlier in the week, about the COVID powers, that are the emergency powers because of the pandemic being used as well, which is a concern in Papua, that police and military are getting more authority and more power because of the pandemic and implementing some of these operations that they implement in Papua. So there's a bit of concern there as well.
Finally, Kuroi, sport. Now, I did ask you, and I don't know if you remember, do you remember that I said, oh, those Fijian sevens players who won the gold medal and the men's rugby sevens at Tokyo, and some of them have now moved on to play league. Does that mean that's the end of their rugby careers? And you were going to check that out.
I did. I spoke with Vinny, our sports expert, and he explained to me that they've been hired on sort of trial and play contracts for a year. So they are effectively gone from rugby for a year. And it's basically to trial them out and see how they play. So they'll be training with the actual squads, but playing in a lower competition in Australia. And if they do well, there is a possibility that they're given longer contracts. So yes to your answer, have they been lost to rugby? But only for 1 year at this point.
Yeah, but if they're very good, and there's a good chance they might be lost to rugby.
That's right.
Maybe Fiji will struggle to hold on to their gold medal because they defended that gold medal because they won it in Rio as well, I think, in 2016. But the reason I had actually forgotten about asking you this, if I hadn't seen your notes, I wouldn't have remembered that you've got a story about a new head coach for, is this the 7-a-side or 15-a-side men's rugby team in Fiji? Or is it the super member of the super rugby competition, the Fijian team? I think it might be the latter.
It is the Super Rugby team, and this is this is just this afternoon. So
it's all coming back to me.
So it's the Fiji Ndrua, one of the Pacifica teams announced for the Super Rugby Pacific competition in next year, 2022-2023. And the former All Blacks and Wallabies skills coach, Mike Byrne, I'm told is the pronunciation, has been appointed as the new head coach of Fiji. So his international coaching experience expands over a 23-year period, includes 2 Rugby World Cups, 5 Tri Nations titles, 5 Rugby Championships, 11 Bledisloe Cups with the All Blacks, and 3 Asian Cups and Pacific Nation Cups with Japan. So quite an experienced head coach that Fiji's bringing in for their first season in Super Rugby.
And hopefully, maybe they'll get a game or two at home. Or maybe not. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with COVID.
There are really high hopes for those in Samoa and Tonga and in Fiji that they might have games going out there. But something to look forward to is the inter-island clashes between the two teams, which will be quite well followed as well.
Yeah. Kuroi, thank you so much for joining us all week. In fact, all the time that you've been speaking to us while Pacific Waves hasn't been running. But Pacific Waves will be back on the airwaves on nights next week, right?
Yes, that's right. We'll be back next week. And also all of our weekly stories wrapped up in Tangata, which is 5:30 Saturday on National.
This coming Saturday afternoon on RNZ National. Thanks so much, Corey. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you.
That's Corey Hawkins, his final Pacific chat. Because COVID permitting, they will be back. Pacific Waves will be back next week. Corey will be hosting it at its usual time of 8:15 Monday through to Friday in the evening. And it also means the Pacific Waves is running again. I'm pretty sure Champions of the Pacific is also back. So our Pacific Sports program will be back on nights at around about 20 minutes to 10 on Wednesday next week.